Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
I'm Meredith. Welcome back to the T-Bone Speaks podcast. Before we get into today's episode with Dr. Brian Dabowski and T-Bone, I have a couple updates in the 3D world. First of all, I'll get into a review from you guys on Apple Podcasts. This one says, great stuff, guys. Love that this will be real world stuff. And that's all. Keeping it simple. In the 3D world, we are sold out for our August sleep course in Nashville, but we do have two dates in Raleigh in September and November, and we've added a 3D printing course October 15th and 16th in Nashville. So let's get into today's episode.
Thank you, Meredith. Listen, this week, I want to continue talking about something that dentists, I don't feel, are open-minded about, and that's learning from DSOs. Now, many of us have a positive experience or positive view of DSOs. Many of us have a negative view of DSOs. And some of us have a, well, it doesn't affect me, who cares, that kind of indifferent view of DSOs. And I always believe that there's a lot we can learn from DSOs because at the end of the day, we're all in business and we're gonna have to learn to live together, to compete together, and do all of that. So I want to kind of get an opportunity to do some podcasts where we learn from DSOs. And this week, I have a great pleasure to have Dr. Brian Dabowski on. He is with Dent First in Metro Atlanta. Brian was actually at UMKC with me in dental school. He was a year behind me, but we've both lost a lot of hair since then.
A lot.
Brian, how are you doing?
Doing great. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun. And you know, when you're classmates with people or you're in the same school and we're only a year apart, so we saw each other, you kind of anticipate, you can see somebody doing this, you can see somebody doing that. And someone like me, people didn't anticipate me doing some of the education stuff that I do or having any level of a clinical excellence whatsoever. And then, I didn't know what DSOs were in school, and I bet you probably didn't have a lot of experience with them either.
Not at all.
And you ended up getting married and joining a practice with your father-in-law.
Yes.
And they had a DSO. It wasn't necessarily what you expected to do out of dental school. How has been being part of a DSO been what you expected of it and what you didn't expect of it?
Well, coming out of dental school, I was younger, and I didn't really have a good direction in life, so I actually went to the military first.
Okay.
And that was really the world's largest group practice, and it taught us the value of having other dentists around, of cooperative benefits. So when I got out of the Air Force and moved to Atlanta, where my wife is from, it seemed natural to move towards a group practice situation, which, as we know now, is called a DSO.
Right.
And a DSO isn't one term. You know, there's many levels of what a DSO is. So for me, it went from this group practice where we had no business, no financial obligation, into what we expect from a private practice in a DSO situation. So for me, I knew I loved dentistry, and I knew nothing about the business end. So for me, it was actually a good transition, maybe not one that I thought I would be in my whole career now, but it was a nice transition to go from the military environment to where I practice.
You know, I didn't think of the military as a big group practice or the largest group practice. It's interesting you brought that up. Now, you said something to me that I want to kind of dive into a little bit. You said you didn't expect to continue to be there for your essentially your entire career at this point. What kept you there?
I mean, when you're young and you make that decision, I want to be a dentist, you know, for me, my relationship was always my pediatric dentist as a kid, and then I moved to the family dentist, and he was my dentist from the time I was, you know, 10 or 11 all the way up through high school, and even when I came home from college, he was still my dentist. So for me, that relationship of going to the office and seeing the dentist was what I expected my career to be, because that's what I knew. I didn't go to this large operation, and so in my mind, that's what dentistry was. It was to have that relationship. So when I got out of the Air Force and this opportunity presented, I felt like it was almost a bridge where I would learn. I've learned the dentistry part in the Air Force. Now I can learn the business end. And for me, I always thought the next step was to go towards the private practice, which, you know, in my mind was, this is what a dentist does.
Right.
And over time, things change, and you know, you have children and you have different responsibilities in life. And for me, it got to the point where I enjoyed the dentistry part of it so much, and I was able to provide for my family the life that I wanted and still have the freedom to have that movement and that flexibility, that the years just kept going by and my professional skills got better. While I understood the business end, I didn't have to be as dedicated towards that.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was just the transition, you know, because it was my father-in-law started the practice with two other dentists, you know, as opportunities present and things happen. About 5 years ago, the other two dentists wanted to retire and get out, and it presented just a different opportunity. And for me, professionally, I was at a good spot. And for me, I've always enjoyed teaching and working with other dentists. So I felt that if we could continue our practice the way it was situated, it would give me a different opportunity and a different direction that I could move my career.
So you mentioned a couple of things there. You talked, you said the word business and things like that. And, you know, we were having, so Brian's here right now for our digital implant continuum with a couple of his docs from the organization. And by the way, Dent First is 14 locations in Metro Atlanta and growing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the growing part's important, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I want to talk about that in a little bit, but you mentioned the word business. And last night we were having a conversation with one of our colleagues from Chicago who is at the course as well. And I think he was a little bit shocked at some of the business part of things that we were just mentioning. You know, why is there an aversion of dentists to have some basic business mindset about their practice? Things like simple things in my mind of how they pay themselves, for example, which was a lot of our conversation the other night.
I mean, at the end of the day, we are a business. Yeah. And there's always, maybe it's a stigma, maybe it's just we're focused as being professional. So in general, we love our patients and we love doing the dental treatment of it. The business often falls to the second or third or fourth priority. So if we can push that responsibility to someone else, even if we're a single dentist office, it's easy to do. And so at the end of the day, you work hard, and at the end of the day, it generates money for you. So you have this financial flow going back and forth. You're great because you articulate it well, that if you wanted to take a month off, if you wanted to take a year off, you could plop a dentist into your chair.
Or two.
Yeah. Yes. And at the end of the day, when it's your own private practice, you don't see yourself as replaceable. Right. And so once they take that model and make themselves replaceable or an employee of the business, then they really see what the value of what they have is. What DSOs do or group practices do is we maximize that as well as we can, because every dentist in the group is just a part of the machine for what it is. They're important parts because that's the part where we deliver healthcare, just as a single dentist private practice does. But what we do is we maximize the business end of it as well as we can, so that way our dentist can provide the care.
Okay. So when we say, again, generic terms like business end, let's point out maybe to the first things that come to your mind. What are the two or three things on the business end that you think most private practitioners are probably missing in their practice that they're looking at pretty regularly? Like, I know one of the things was paying yourself as an associate. What is that? What should that mean to a dentist?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Well, it just depends on the marketplace that you're at. You know, many dentists like to have an associate, so they know what the cost is. Of having an associate.
Well, I'll argue they don't know. They just put somebody in, but.
Sure. Well, there's a financial cost to putting someone in. So, you know, having that person adds to the volume of the office. So the owner dentist or the senior dentist is basically an associate of his own practice.
Right.
So once he pulls that part out, then he has to pay his team.
Right.
The team. You know, we have goals on how much we want to pay our team and what that should look like. Then there's the point of the overhead of the building. Do we own the building? Mm-hmm. Do we lease the building? How much should supplies cost? Who's watching the supplies? Mm-hmm. You know, where the cost and where the drain is on the practice that doesn't allow you to have as much profit as you should have once you pay yourself. So that's where the management is. And I will tell you, in general, the dentists that I meet overall are not great business people. Yeah. You know, they're not really thinking about their practice as a business. And it's hard because you want to be busy treating patients. And the other tasks of your day of ordering, of watching the books, of meeting with, you know, product distributors, of dealing with your accountant, you know, those are just, in general, drags on your day because...
We want to be in a little zone and twiddle on teeth.
Yep. And that's what I want to provide for my docs. And what I tell them is, if you want that private practice for yourself where you can have your name on the door and you get to pick out the couch and the curtains and you can pick out everything, then you should do that. But many of our dentists just want to treat patients. And so if you're going to go into private practice, you know, and you're probably, you know, at least a part of your practice, you knew how many hours it took to manage, you know, your team, how many hours it took to meet with the accountant, how many hours it took. And if you take those hours and instead of using them to run your business and use them to be productive dentists and generate income, that's what I do. So if my dentists want to work 35 hours, I'm going to give them 35 hours of patient care so they can be the most profitable. And what we do as a DSO is we look at every provider we have, be it a hygienist, a dentist, a specialist, and we want to make them do what they can do the most, because that's when they're going to see the most patients, they're going to do the most dentistry, and they're going to have the most change. At the end of the day, that often generates the best income for them, we believe, and that's the model that we stick with.
You know, I think most dentists, if they just paid themselves like an associate, they would find that they may actually be better off being an associate somewhere because there's just not a lot left over. And so for the going rate, typically throughout the country, somewhere in the 25 to 33% ballpark, depending on the metro area that you're in, that's what you should pay yourself. And a lot of dentists, really, they just own a job.
Yep.
And they don't really have any income from that. They don't have any business income from that job. The other thing that you said that kind of stuck out to me there was when you said you think of your providers, you mentioned dentist, hygienist, and then you said specialist. And I think that's another area that private practitioners should look into is bringing in specialists. So what has specialty care allowed you guys to do in terms of growth, revenue, patient care, all of those things?
I mean, in general, we don't have patients who come in and go, man, that was the best DO I ever got. You know, right. They don't come in looking for that. They come in looking for relationships and they come in looking for knowing people. And what we try to do is really have that stability with the team that supports the dentist. So if they're used to seeing Betty at the front desk, that's where they build their relationship. So if the dentist can't do all their dentistry and they go to the front and Betty says, don't worry, the periodontist will be here on Friday and you can come see the periodontist here in our office, that's often easy for the patients because they don't have to worry about finding a new office and going somewhere that they're unfamiliar with and seeing unfamiliar people at the front desk and not knowing their financial policies and things like that. So having a periodontist in the office allows us to do cases that may be out of what I can do, although I'm here at an implant class trying to do a little bit more than I can. But, there's more complex cases so that now the patient can get the dentistry that we think that they need and we've shown them the value of why they need it and they're ready to go and we can actually provide that all in-house. So specialists are great. We need them as general dentists.
We need them for good clinical care.
Yep. No. And there's many a general dentist who will have a periodontist. And when I see specialists who are new to Atlanta and come interview with us, I tell them there's really no reason to ever have an office of yourself. You may not want to come with me as a DSO, but you could easily, rotate around private practices in your, in the city and have a great practice. But again, it comes down to, do you need that building with your name on the door? Mm-hmm. Or do you just want to focus your life on providing dental care and making that your business?
All right, so I'm going to pretend I'm a listener, okay? I'm hearing you talk about specialists, the values and the benefits of all of that. And it works for you, but not for me mentality would be like, well, you're a DSO with 14 offices. Of course it makes sense for you to get a specialist. How can I, as a single location, tap into that? How could I make that happen for myself? Where do I search for a specialist?
Sure. I mean, many dentists are part of their, local societies or they know other dentists. Many specialists know people that are coming out of school. Sometimes it just pays to reach out to a dental program, a periodontal school program and seeing who's coming out because many times that they're coming back to the area. It's hard. And that's one of the things in dentistry is, how do you find what's next? And I tell a lot of the dentists that I meet, I still think the mentor-mentee relationship of a senior dentist with an associate is a great relationship.
Right.
The problem is, how do you find that, and how do you feel like you're going to get put into a situation that's going to help your career develop? And I tell a lot of the dentists, your first job doesn't have to be your only job, but you should really find a place that you're happy doing dentistry. So if you can find that person, many group periodontal practices have new associates that want more hours and they may be able to rotate through. So it's hard because there's no clearinghouse. There's no direction in dentistry yet.
But I think you bring up a good point. Just like when I did, when we did our startup, we weren't busy, correct? So when some XYZ perio, endo, whatever, ortho, whatever it may be, when they do their startup, they're not going to be busy. Maybe they're looking for an extra day or two. And the advice I would give somebody is, and this will kind of transition to our next topic, which is associates, is we're always looking for the perfect or the long term. And really that part of our mindset has to go away. We should be looking, instead of trying to find the perfect specialist or the long-term XYZ solution, we should look at a solution that gets us to the next step, because that is more important than finding somebody, the forever person.
Yeah. And in general, with specialists, the real relationship is with the general dentist.
Right.
So I see my patients every 6 months. And, you know, the practice I've been in for 18 years now. So I have kids that I saw as 6 and 7, and they're, you know, 20 and 24. So I still have that general dentist, family dentist relationship with my patients. But if they need their wisdom teeth out and they want to be IV sedated, I can have my oral surgeon do that. So it doesn't have to be the same oral surgeon that their older brother saw 3 years ago. Yeah. It just has to be an oral surgeon that I can provide for them. If they need a connective tissue graft, I'm going to send them to the periodontist that I have right there. And that's part of what you're thinking. Yeah. But for us, you know, we're a DSO, but we're dentist owned. And so for us, we're a little different because we really let our dentist drive the patient flow, because we so strongly believe in the family, the general dentist relationship.
Well, I believe the general dentists are the gatekeepers. Specialist businesses would dry up if we stop referring, you know. And
but many DSOs don't value that. Many DSOs use the specialist as a revenue driver, as a way to direct the practice, where we try and do it the other way. We let our general dentists develop the treatment plan. Yeah. We let the general dentist treat what they can with the patients, how they want to, when they want to, and then use the specialist really how they should be used.
Yeah, just kind of like we would use in private practice.
Correct.
And I've talked to a lot of general dentists where I've talked to them about learning new things and training, and they go, yeah, I don't need to place implants. I wouldn't be allowed to in my current environment, because that's what the surgeon does or the periodontist does or whoever does, and my job is just to refer it out. And so that I'm glad to hear that you guys are more focused on allowing general dentists, because we have two of them in our program included, sure, plus you, is allowing them to expand their skill set, because everybody wins in that. Certainly the DSO wins. I'll argue that the patient wins the most, because they have the same person that they love and trust doing that care. Now, along that line, you know, those of you that have been listening to the show for a long time know that I'm a big believer in never practicing alone, that you should develop or work towards developing your own single location DSO for just namesake. And what I mean by that is you pay yourself as an associate, you see what your business actually makes, and then you work towards working less, or you work towards doing more of the dentistry you want. You work towards, you know, spending more time with the family, you know, for the next 3 or 4 years, and then coming back in, whatever it is you want, that I believe you've earned the right to do as the person who's taken the risk to build the name on the door, whatever it may be. But to do all of these things, we need help. And that help in dentistry is driven by dentists. So in this way, private practitioners, the independent dentists, have a similar challenge that every DSO faces, and that's attracting, hiring, and retaining associates. And I think that's an area that we as individual dentists can really learn from DSOs. So what would you be your thoughts? How are you guys solving this? And to a certain degree, you guys have it harder because you're competing against larger DSOs and other DSOs who have departments that are built around this, who'd provide signing bonuses, who provide, you know, loan repayment. I've had one DSO here locally that will buy people, you know, cars and stuff like that as an attraction tool. How are you guys, what advice would you give to the independent dentist and yourself in attracting and getting the right associate?
Yeah, I mean, the thought of DSO in dentistry has really evolved and changed over the years. When I was in dental school, when you were in dental school, you know, the professors would tell us DSO's evil, you know.
I never heard the word DSO.
Oh, group practices, these corporations, right. Those corporations back then, these corporations are evil. They're going to suck the life out of you. You know, you really need to set up your shingle and get out there and do those things. And, you know, you don't have to, you know, and maybe it's a change in the generation. You know, the dentists who are coming out now that are 28 and 30 are a different generation, because we're old now, you know.
I feel it.
Unfortunately.
You look pretty healthy. I feel it.
But, you know, we've seen dentistry evolve. I mean, the percentage of who goes into group DSO type practices is changing because, you know, it's what people want. You know, do they want to focus their life on a business and owning a business and saying, I'm a business owner, or, you know, they don't use that word, but I'm the dentist on the corner kind of thing, you know? Or are they more partial towards being able to provide care? So what I talk to my dentist who I interview is, what do you want? You know, many of them see the contracts and the, you know, the heavy burden of going into a large DSO, and they say, well, I'm getting $20,000 sinus bonus, or I'm getting this great deal, but I have this contract this thick and I can't even read half the words in, you know, and I don't like the push and the pressure. And again, you know, finding a single dentist to work with and associate with could be a great experience. But somewhere in the middle, these dentists are looking for a home and they want to be in an environment where they can be happy. And so every person is looking for something different. You know, if they need and they want that desire to have their name on the door and be able to pick out every little thing in their practice, any DSO, my size, large size, is not going to work.
I'll say the individual dentist, that's not going to work. So, you know, interviewing somebody, if they want that type of input, I mean, that person shouldn't be an associate in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, and where we went to dental school, many of our classmates went to rural Kansas and rural Iowa, and they were forced to find a building and set up shop and learn on their own and figure it out because they were the only dentist in the county. So,
Or the multiple counties.
Or multiple counties, yeah. I mean, and so if you're going to be a rural dentist, there's many great opportunities out there, but that's not glorious and glamorous. And, you know, dentists want to be in the big cities.
It's glorious to me because it sounds great to be somewhere peaceful.
Yeah. I mean, and, but you've been practicing 22 years now. Yeah. So you're thinking, well, what's different or what can I do different? So, but you've developed a great practice. You have a great following. Your skills have developed from what they were to, you know, all the steps along the way. So, you know, what I tell, again, is, you know, where you are at your career may not be the same in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years. What I try and do as a, you know, as a dentist-driven group is I constantly work with my dentist. Where are you? You know, why do I have two of my dentists here? Because they feel like they have great general dentistry skills, and their next evolution of their career is to now place implants and be more comprehensive. That may open up a door for a new dentist coming in to do more of the restorative, just like you've talked about.
Right. I mean,
those kind of things can be applied in our group as well, because when it comes down to it, what we're trying to do is provide the best care for the patients in the easiest way, because I can be open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I can be open 8 to 6 on Fridays, and I can be open on the weekends because I have a facility that allows the dentist to provide care when they want, in general, how they want, as long as they're providing good care under our roof.
Right. Interesting. So now I've hired an associate. We've got them. Talk to us about how is associate pay set up, and what can we learn about paying associates to retain them? Because it is important.
It is. And, you know, I'm a PPO practice like...
Right, just like me.
Like you. Yeah. And so we're bound by contracts and we're bound by the patients that come. I mean, 70% of our patients who come are coming to us
in network.
And so that's a good portion of our, so it does limit a little bit of what you can earn and what you can do when you're abiding by your contract. So for our associates, we're very clear up front what our practice is, and we set the expectations to what we expect them to have. So if we can be truthful, if we can be as honest as we can about what the opportunity is, but as a large group, you know, I'm generating many new patients, so it allows them to slowly build their practice. So for my associates, I try and get them going. You know, for many times we have a beginning salary, we'll call it, to get them acclimated to our group, make sure it's a fit for them, make sure it's a fit for us.
Do you think that's important? Do associates look for that? Some level of guarantee for the first 3 months, 6 months? And if you don't mind being more specific, not necessarily dollar amounts, but you have some type of salary for, is a year too long?
For us, a year is too long.
Okay.
You know, what makes, you know, our dentist asks us, you know, how do we know when we're successful? Mm-hmm. And for us, the quickest we can get them on a commission, the better they do, the better that they can provide care, the better that they can express the value of the care that they've diagnosed to their patients, the quicker that their personal income will go up. Mm-hmm. We all have different measures of what success is to us. So, you know, for some people, it's an amount of money. For some people, it's I had a great week and I did care that I never thought I could do before. Right. And, you know, I pushed the envelope. And for us, we have the ability to take dentists who come and say, you know, I really want to do endo. And so I can bring them and we can sit with them and show them different techniques and, you know, have that mentor type relationship with them and help them grow their own practice within us. We are weird as a group because we don't lock them into contracts where you can't go anywhere, right? For us, what makes our dentist successful is that we want them to stay here. We want them to be happy. And when the dentists are happy, they're going to stay. So that's how we do our retention. But yes, we do have to start them on a salary.
6 months, 3 months.
Our goal is usually 3 months.
3 months. And that's a fair goal.
It is. It is. And there are times where we put them in a spot where it may take longer for them to grow. Yeah. So at 3 months, we can have the discussion with them. You're doing great, you know, and we're going to extend you on a salary another month or two because it just hasn't quite kicked in yet, but you're doing everything right, you know. So I have the flexibility, or we have the flexibility to extend that and have that dialogue with our doctors. But the sooner we can get them self-sufficient, they can see the benefit, you know, the fruits of their labor. Because even if I put them on a salary, it may be great at the beginning, but after 3 or 4 months, they look and they say, well, if I was on commission, I would make this much, you know, and now I'm limited by a salary. So, you know, the quicker we get them off, they can really dictate their practice and how you know, the results of their work is.
All right. So to pay associates well, we need to have, let me rephrase that. To attract and keep good people, I think that people want security.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think that's what we have to look at is we have to give people some level of security when they're joining, whether they're seasoned or non-seasoned. So we should offer them some level of salary for the first 3 months, probably in what you're saying is suggesting. And then typically, you're going to pay a percentage of production, adjusted production, or you guys, or do you suggest collections?
For us, we pay on collections.
Okay.
And, you know, that's always the debate that goes around because the docs will say, you know, it's my job to produce dentistry. It's your job to collect it. So if I'm producing the dentistry, I should be paid on that. And so that can set up a different type of environment where they're just drilling, filling every tooth in the world without thinking of the, you know, the ramifications of that. So for me, I show my dentist that we work to collect every dollar because in my position as a owner of a DSO, I'm going to pay my associates, I'm going to pay my team members, I'm going to pay my bills, and then the money that's left comes to me as, you know, the dividend of the business.
Yeah.
So if we're producing crazy numbers, you know, but not collecting, that last little bit that we don't collect comes to me. So, you know, I make it as clear as I can that I'm going to do everything to collect every dollar. And we have systems in place where when a doctor puts out a treatment plan, we work to make sure the patients know their responsibilities, what their insurance responsibilities are. So that way, when we do the work, the patients already have the right expectations and we expect to collect what they can. And so, you know, many times in private offices, you know, we all that play the PPO game, insurances will send a, you know, an EOB back. We didn't get your x-ray.
Right.
We didn't get this. The patient was termed. You know, the employer is wrong. This wrong. You know, they play that game with you. And many times in your office, you're going to be like, that's just too much work. Or the girl's going to like stick the, you know, the sheet of paper in the shredder and be like, I never saw that. I thought we would gotten paid on that. You know, like who knows? So it's behooving on us to keep working to collect what we have. So, you know, I have the administrative group in place to make sure that we're collecting what we're producing that we should be collecting. So we demonstrate to our doctors why collections are so important because they need to produce and we need to collect. And as a team together, that's what's going to make us successful.
Any other suggested benefits that equate to compensation for dentists that you would suggest that we could to help us private independent dentists compete with small and larger DSOs?
Yeah, I mean, more and more the larger DSOs are getting very aggressive. So they talk, you know, about covering their malpractice insurance and sending them to CE and, you know, retirement benefits and, you know, all these other things. And to me, you know, it really just comes down to a balance, right? Because if you're paying a lot of the other things, at the end of the day, you still have to run a business or you still have to meet the bottom line. So if you're going to offer a lot of benefits, it ends up taking away from their commission right. that they're going to receive. So to us, you know, I'm okay lowering someone's commission and helping them cover their malpractice. Sure. But what we try and do is we try and have a business discussion with our independent contractor dentist and say, set up a business, run your business from the money that you make from dentistry and create your own business inside of ours. And, you know, what we talked about is our dentists aren't worried about the health of our business, right? And in many things that you talk about is how do you create your dental business? For my independent contractor dentists, they're trying to grow their individual practice.
Right.
And so the things that they do to grow their practice and that I can help them is where I like to spend my time. So, you know, whether I help them with getting CEs, bringing them to a course like this, you know, directing them.
I thank you for that. My kids thank you too.
You're welcome. And I'm glad to be here because, you know, you see when people are excited about what they're doing, they're happy to do dentistry. And, you know, I brought you two dentists who are in very different places in their career. But when they come here, they get energized and they see the possibility and they think about what they can do in their own practice. And so it may be great for my business. It may not be great for my business. And that's not their concern and shouldn't be their concern. But what they're coming away with from a course like yours is they can say, I can go back tomorrow or Monday, today's Saturday. I can go back Monday and I know that I can put a graft in and I can tell that patient, I'm going to take this tooth out and put the graft in. I'm going to put your implant in. I'm going to restore your implant. And that patient who has the relationship with that dentist now
trusts them.
Right, right. And I took two dentists who were like, my patients would never accept that from me. And so in part one, we came here and they started having that discussion, but now they have the confidence to have that discussion. They're like, the patients really do want me to help them. And
I'm like, the patients say yes.
Yes. And they do because it's the same thing. They said yes to your DO. They said yes to your crown. They said yes to your root canal. Of course, doing an implant is more money, but it's still saying yes to the right treatment for them.
And it's all trust.
Yep.
I think that point is so important. Whether you're quote unquote selling a DO, a buccal pit, a crown, a root canal, an implant, a full arch case, a cosmetic case, it's all a trust relationship. That patient has to trust you. And I'm not letting anybody I trust, don't trust, do even a DO on me, much less an implant or something else. So you know, I want somebody good doing all of that.
And many dentists out there, they talk about there's so much competition and there's so much of this out there. And what I tell my decks is there's no competition with other dentists out there. If the patient's going to go, they're going to go anyway. Mm-hmm. The competition is the value for their dollar. Because they have the dollar to go buy an iPhone, they have a dollar to go on a trip, or they have a dollar to fix their tooth. So once you explain the value, once you present the reason they need this healthcare, and they believe it, and they understand it, they'll make it happen. And so once you compete for the value of their time and their money and pain sometimes, you know, I tell my patients, you know, you got to be ready here. You got to be ready here and you got to be ready in your wallet. So once they're ready in those three things, and we do everything we can to help them, our patients get there by the way the dentist talks to them, by the way we present, by the tools I give my dentist. And that's what allows me as a group practice to survive.
Yeah. It's interesting you said something. I was just thinking the iPhone is the most luxurious phone you can buy. I know you don't have one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
which is a very sore subject of me.
Yes. But all your listeners, send me your dollars so I can afford an iPhone.
You can afford an iPhone. Trust me. In fact, I'll just buy one for you just to be able to make our group text work. But my point is people don't buy a $1,000 phone. They buy a $30 phone every month.
Correct.
And I think, you know, I don't want to use the word preach it, but I harp on this so much that our patient, very few of people that have iPhones, maybe 10%, 15%, can actually afford to just pay $1,200 for an iPhone, $1,000, whatever the number may be. They're buying a $30 phone every month.
And but that's the value to them. It's right. Worth $30 a month to pay for that phone.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and All-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah, and so an implant is a $200 implant every month or a $100 implant every month. And Smile Direct Club is $89, you know, aligners every month. And I think that's one of the things I think people have to really understand.
And you've talked about that many times about the firm financial agreement. And many of the dentists out there don't feel comfortable extending that to
How important has third-party funding and payment plans been for you guys?
I mean, we have Care Credit. Sure. You know, we've tried the Wells Fargo Financial. And in general, it's just another layer. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, it's really a barrier. Unless the patients come with already their Care Credit account and being comfortable with that, it doesn't always go smoothly. So for us to be able to break it up and say, you know, it's $100 a month mm-hmm. times 12 months, or, you know, if you need braces, it's $200 down and it's going to be this, you know, it allows them to understand it in a terms that are easier to understand. So, you know, there's always sticker shock with everything, you know.
Right.
Many of us don't go buy a car.
I don't believe in sticker shock anymore because I see these trucks that people are buying, and they're not the trucks that I saw growing up. They're not $15,000 trucks.
I think the average price on a car now is like $35,000. I mean, and for many people, I mean, that's a significant number, but they don't look at it like that. You know, it's a $300 a month payment, you know, and people are used to that. And again, as a group, you know, I have the ability to do that more if I want to, and I have the ability to help my doctors figure out a way to get their cases through and going and done. The hard part for me is that, you know, I have so many team members, I have so many people around that, you know, keeping everybody on the same page is where I spend the time.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think as independent practices, we that's an area that we have an advantage.
Of course.
Is that we can typically keep team members longer, and we can pivot and move our ship a little bit faster. And
the second part, true, but I mean, I have team members that have been with me 20 and 25 years because they're comfortable, they're happy, they believe in what we do. So, you know, maybe that's changing a little bit, you know, over time because there is more, you know, competition for the team members. You know, it used to be heavy competition to find the dentists, but, you know, now there's competition with the dentists, but there's also a lot of competition in team members, you know. What I pay, they pay, you know, what they want. But, you know, in general, we try a very decentralized model. So we let each office really run, and to create that feeling of what you have with your group, what, you know, the single dentist has with his group. And hopefully we do it good enough to keep going.
All right, last question, Brian.
Yes.
If you were to go back into private practice, independent, single location, whatever term we want to use for it, like you get your own door, your single location, your own name on the door, what would you take with you from your DSO that you would absolutely implement in your own single location practice?
You know, whether it's from that or not, maybe it's just from me, but I value the relationship of the doctor with the patient. So, you know, and maybe all DSOs don't have that, but doing good dentistry and caring for the patient is always going to be paramount. From there, you know, then you learn treating your dental practice as a business, you mm-hmm. know, and that's the model that I think all dentists, because they really need to know what they're working for, right? Mm-hmm. I'm working for my family, but I'm working to provide for my family. So, you know, I don't want to work my butt off, you know, where I could just be an associate somewhere else and make more money, right? So understanding that there is a business side to what you do as a dentist is very important and has to be a portion of your consciousness all the time, because as a dentist, you work hard. You know, you put your back on the line, you put your hands on the line, you know, you put your mm-hmm. physical health on the line, but you're doing things that you love. And so sometimes people do things that they love to their own personal detriment, mm-hmm. right? Be it financially or health-wise. So, you know, when you go to private practice, you know, really practice the way you want, do what you can, but make it make sense in a business way as well, because you have a great skill, you have a great need in our community, and you should be compensated and you should run your business well enough. Because if you can't, then maybe private practice couldn't or shouldn't be for you.
You know, I think, you know, dentistry today in the 2020s, it's hard for me to say that 2020s part, but it's not like it was in the 2000s. I mean, the cost of doing business is higher. The quote-unquote competition is harder. And I think, you know, as much as I'm a champion for capitalism and owning your own shingle and all of that stuff, I think people need to look that maybe being an associate is not as bad as we made it out to be, or, you know, not as, you know, as a failure or whatever it is. Because I don't think a lot of dentists or many people are making money being a business owner. I think by the time they pay themselves as an associate, there's probably 3-5% left. And you're right, when you look at the hours that we put into owning the business, maybe we would be better off just doing dentistry those 4 hours a week or 5 hours a week, and that would make up for whatever dividends we get as being the business owner.
Yeah, and as well as that, I mean, you always feel the pressure of your building and your people and, you know, and that. And, you know, when you go on vacation, you have to think, okay, what are they doing while I'm on vacation? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so many more things that go into it. You know, for me, I enjoy my time with my family. And, you know, just like you preach, is, you know, you always have to make a decision. Is it about more about the money right now? Mm-hmm. Is it more about the time right now? And, you know, I'm in that same boat that you are. Yeah. I have kids that are in their teenage years, and I know that they're going to be gone soon. And I want to be able to take a week on their spring break and drive around nowhere with them, just to say I drove around nowhere with them.
Or just so they felt that they had you drive them around nowhere.
Yes. And, you know, someday COVID will be over and we'll be able to, you know, fly to Cancun again and sit on the beach again with them and, you know, and enjoy that and, you know, do those adventures and, you know, have those stories and, you know, and those sorts of things. You know, I grew up very similar to you. You know, I had middle-class parents who worked their butt off, and, you know, to see their both sons go to college was like the first of our generation, first of our family, you know, my brother and I's generation, to be able to go to college. And, you know, my parents would have given anything to have that for us, and they did, and they worked, and, you know, we took a vacation when we could. But, you know, I'm in a different spot in my life, you know, so, you know, I've been blessed with the opportunities I've had, and, you know, nice things have always fallen towards me, and I want to take advantage of those and enjoy my family. And, you know, the group practice, you know, I like the dentists I have, and I want to keep them getting better. And, you know, I say that as a business owner, right? It sounds good, but I mean it. You know, like, I love when my dentists have successes and those sorts of things, because I'm a general dentist and I've had the struggles and the failures and all that. Just like, you know, you teach it, so you see, you know.
I've done it myself, and I've seen it, unfortunately, as well. So, Brian, how can people get in touch with you, or if they're interested in Dent First, what's the best way to get information?
Sure. You know, we're in Atlanta. We always have opportunities, so everybody come. www.dentfirst.com. Just spell out the words. You can find us there. There's a Join Us tab on the internet. That's probably the best way.
You can find our phone numbers. With you?
If they want to get in touch with me, my email is B for Brian Dabowski at dentfirst.com. Please email me anytime.
anytime, like day or night.
Yes.
In fact, I think you should only email him at 3 a.m.
Perfect. That's my favorite hours of the day because it's quiet and I can be right there for you.
Brian, thank you so much. And let's go have a few drinks and eat some dinner.
Perfect, Tarun. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.